and welcome to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. I am Dave. I am not Sam because, unfortunately, Sam will not be able to join us ever again. He unfortunately died of a massive coronary in the middle of the 10th inning on Wednesday when the Cubs won the World Series.
Yeah, I'm totally dead.
Resurrection! Oh my goodness!
I am here to refute everything we've done in the past 6.5 years, 300 plus episodes. I am speaking to you from the afterlife. And I've got something to talk about, something that I'm sure is on everybody's minds, and they've all been wondering what I think about this. Of course, it's that guy on YouTube drinking cyanide.
What? I am so lost. What is this?
Oh yeah, just this kid on YouTube put some like 15 milligrams of sodium cyanide in water.
Nice tall glass of water.
Yeah, and drank it.
That's terrifying.
And it blew up the internet or something. Like everybody, like all my friends know about it.
Oh,
it's this Cody's Lab guy who I've been following for some time.
I've missed that.
Yeah, he's great because he's really. Well, I was originally introduced to him because he does beekeeping, and I really like beekeeping, and I would keep bees if I wouldn't die.
This is kind of a job requirement.
Yeah. Try not to die in the keeping of the bees. And he doesn't wear nothing. He doesn't care about nothing. And then he got really famous for making gunpowder out of urine.
Oh.
Yeah, so he's one of those YouTube guys. And then he just recently did a video of him drinking cyanide. And just to prove where I'm from, the kind of person I am, the first thought in my head was, dude, no. And yeah, it's like, dude, don't do that. It's creeping me out. Okay, so Cubs, right. All right,
Cubs
fine.
Cubs win!
Yeah.
I did see something online that suggested, of course the Cubs won the World Series. This is the season finale of America.
Few of our friends and relations have actually messaged. So this actually is proof that David Bowie was holding together the fabric of the universe.
Yeah, the universe is dissolving. The Cubs are winning.
David Bowie or Prince?
Yeah.
Bowie. It's Sam.
Oh, fair enough.
Hey, I like Prince.
Yes, yes you do.
Prince is an amazing guitar player and nobody knows it. Well, they do it now after he's dead.
Yeah.
But it's like, I really like Prince. Like, a couple places on his... this is not a conversation about Prince. This is a conversation about the Cubs. Yes. So I have done, I think, two episodes of Ask an Atheist where the title is The Cubs Win the World Series. And now I don't know what to call this because it's actually true. Okay, so what we are establishing right now is that in 100 years' time or maybe 500 years' time, Back to the Future will be a religion and Michael J. Fox is its prophet.
Because... Close enough?
Close enough.
Okay.
Well, Jesus died
religion,
in what year?
Yeah, religion
zero?
Is valid. Religion, people think religion is true by way more specious evidence. These guys were off by a single season. That is atomic level accuracy in the world of religion. That is amazing. Like, that's
and
incredible
when you're speaking
accuracy.
Deep time, I mean, really, it's cosmic like, time, that's nothing. That's a blink.
Even baseball time, I mean.
Yeah.
What was it? Mark Twain watched the last time the Cubs won the World Series?
Yes.
Habsburgs?
There was all sorts of comments. Mark Twain could have been watching. The Habsburgs were watching.
Ships.
The opposing team had to be informed of their loss by telegram. ships could still be unsinkable.
So 2124 then.
21, yeah. See you guys in 2124.
I'm holding my breath.
Do. So it was an amazing playoff, and we've been on recorded material for the last couple months because, we're working on the house. I have been doing almost nothing but asbestos abatement, which is, terrifying and awesome at the same time.
Which is usually a good euphemism for a Cubs season, but...
Right, yeah. trying not to die in a fire. I took time out to watch this game. After I did a couple episodes where I talked about baseball, usually surrounding the St. Paul Saints, or rather the Mr. Paul Aints,
mm-hmm.
I'll usually get a couple comments. This is not a sports podcast. Why are you talking about baseball?
Well, atheists like sports too occasionally.
Yes, that's become a...
I'm proof of that.
Yeah. you know, and so so I kind of cut down on it. And at post shows, I don't really talk about my interest in baseball. I usually, if I'm talking about sports, I'm talking to you about the Sounders and what Hands Free Football is up to.
Handsfreefootball.com.
So I keep my baseball to myself.
Right.
And then the Cubs ended up with the best record in baseball, which is like 103 59-1 or something like that.
Yeah, the tie.
Yeah.
The tie in baseball? How often does that happen?
So it's 162 games. I know they won 103 games. They tied one game.
How do they? I thought that wasn't possible. What?
Oh boy.
Again, okay. So unraveling of the universe.
It wouldn't be a Cubs win, a Cubs series, if it weren't freaking stupid. So let's let's talk about this, because it was a game against the Pirates at the end of the season. They had played six innings of baseball, which according to MLB rules is officially a game if it gets rained out. The score stands. They were tied at the bottom of the sixth. They went into rain delay. The game got washed out. It had no affecting on the standings, and it was so close to the end of the season that there was no chance to make it up, and the Pirates weren't even close to it. I think they were sub 500.
Right.
So, the commissioner of baseball said it was a tie.
Fascinating. I did not even know that could happen.
Yeah. It's very rare. The last time it happened was 2005.
Huh.
Are we talking about that All-Star game where they just decided to tie the All-Star game because they ran out of pitchers?
Man, a word I won't say on my podcast, the All-Star game. I am not a fan of the All-Star game. And I don't even, I was kind of into it once they said, you know, whoever wins the All-Star game gets the series home field advantage. Don't care.
Don't care.
It's pointless. Stop doing it.
I like the concept of All-Star games in general. I think baseball's actually got one of the best. And it's nice just in the middle of the season. Take a 3-day break. Everyone gets it off. Let's go have a little fun.
The break is cool. Keep the break and call it the All-Star break. Name the All-Star teams. Call it the All-Star break. Just don't play the game.
See, and I've heard,
or you do it like Rocky IV and have a computer simulation. Like have like the All-Star teams get together and then they each play like video game baseball against each other and then they aggregate the scores and figure out who wins that way. That would be better.
That would be fun. Or like fantasy baseball. You know, play a card game, tabletop.
What about like the home run derby and all the other sort of outside events?
Given the kind of baseball I like, I actually find the home run derby a little annoying.
An excuse to eat hot dogs and drink
Not
beer.
True for the youth home run derby. Sorry. Keep the crap out of that. That's fun.
My apologies. The home run derby.
Yes, the home run derby. Does Cleveland have an MLS team?
Cleveland does not. I don't.
Okay, so there will be no Chicago Fire.
No.
Cleveland game, then you can call it the home run derby.
That would be good. No, unfortunately not. There is a Cincinnati FC in a lower division,
yeah,
but not in MLS. So.
I love this season. I loved this World Series. Mm-hmm. You got the Chicago Cubs, and you've got the Cleveland vaguely racists, and you got the Cleveland Indians. And they're both small ball teams. So they're both lots of singles, lots of doubles, lots of triples, lots of RBIs, not a lot of slugfests, not
some
a lot
bunting.
Of pitcher's duels, a lot of bunting.
Good fielding.
A lot of good cerebral tactical baseball. It's a lot of fun. And so I'm watching this on FS1 with, I am a part of the league of baseball fans who just cannot stand Joe Buck. where him and his entire box are all pitchers and people involved with pitching and players and people involved with baseball from a earlier, much more boring and, shall we say, a more chemically enhanced era of baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And so they just don't understand how these teams play. And they're just not. And like I think they hate the Cubs. Alex over at the Inciting Incident podcast thinks they hate the Indians. And then I'm just watching it and I go, no, they just don't understand either of these teams. I just really have no idea what is going on with this World Series.
They want the Yankees or the Giants.
They want Yankees 2 Electric Boogaloo. And they're not going to get it. And it was a lot of really fun baseball, as evidenced by Game 7.
Mm-hmm. That was an incredible game.
Which they say it's a stupid sports cliche, but the game had everything.
Mm-hmm.
As far as baseball is concerned, it had everything. It had bunting. It had didn't have a balk, but it had hit by pitch. It had a rain delay. It had extra innings.
I contend that if you had tried to, as a screenwriter, write this script starring Kevin Costner as one of the baseball heroes, it would have gone back to the cutting floor saying, "Nah, they're too heavy handed. You can't include all of this in one game."
Yeah. And it was, this whole segment is about the Cubs. and it was an amazing baseball game. And Becky has her baseball boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
May I congratulate you on your transition into momdom without actually having a kid?
Yes, certainly. This is me channeling my mother when growing up. She called Manny Ramirez of the Boston Red Sox her boyfriend. Mm-hmm. So I adopted my own little Cubs boyfriend. Little being the operative word because like all of them are
He's 9 feet tall!
Yeah, but they're like eighth graders. All of them. Like the average age of the Cubs players is like 24 3/4. I am this many years
9 old. 9 feet tall, 18 tons, has to actually lie on the floor in order to bat, and that would be
Chris Bryant.
Indeed.
I remember a long time ago there was a game, I want to say it was a series when the Mariners in 2001 got to the first round, the ALDS against the Yankees, and Bob Costas was the announcer for that one.
Yeah, he's good. I like
back
him.
When he used to do baseball. Bob Costas is still one of my favorites, but I remember he's saying at some point, it's like someone came up and asked me, who do you want to win this series? And the fact is, I'm a baseball fan. I'm not a Mariners fan. I'm not a Yankees fan. I'm a baseball fan. I want this series to go to 7 games, and I want game 7 to go to extra innings.
Yeah.
That's what I want.
Yeah. I don't.
And that's what we got in this one. And it was, like, I am not a huge, I'm a Mariners fan, which is, now I believe we take the crown of long suffering from you guys and put it
on our actually, the Indians Cleveland still has it. Because they,
But I really did sort of fall in love with the Cubs as a postseason, and mostly this season. Like, they've been a lot of fun to watch.
Give you much of a choice, I'll be honest.
True. Yeah. And it's always fun to be around the person who's passionate about it, even if you're not. Like, the person who loves that team, it just brings you along for the ride. So that's been a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
But as an outsider, really, I wanted Game 7 to go to extra innings because I wanted that, like, intense emotional feeling that you get when you're not as emotionally involved, but have a really great
game. I nearly had a heart. I nearly died.
You got up and walked away from everyone's at the table to watch alone for a while.
I had to, because everybody, it's like everybody's starting to get disinterested in the game because it looks like the Cubs aren't going to win, and they start talking about stuff, and I'm like, F you guys, I'm going to go drink myself to death and watch this thing die slowly.
There was a number of years ago, in fact, it was 2012, I was at a Ask an Atheist post show while a Sounders playoff game was happening, and the Sounders were getting their butts kicked 3-0, and hearing people around me just start going off about, you know, I don't really like sports because this and this and this. I'm like, no, I'm suffering here.
I think we finally killed off the sports ball meme
in
our little group, which, if you don't like sports, that's cool.
The next segment will be better, I promise.
Yeah, can we stop with the sports insults? Insults.
There are atheists that have interests outside of talking about God and religion,
right?
And for some of them, it is sports,
right?
And even amongst people that
I said this was about the Cubs, not sports.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah. No, go on.
For some of them, it is the Cubs.
Yeah. It was a bit weird because, like, I invited everybody to a bar to watch to help me watch Game 7 because I lost money on this because I had fake money, but I made a bet on Lester pitching at the top of the eighth inning, a pitch that goes so well, it tunnels into the true vacuum, creating a vacuum metastability collapse event, ending the game in a tie, and also the universe. Because, Prince is gone, David Bowie's gone, the Cubs are winning the World Series. That, I think, is the next step, is vacuum collapse.
Fair enough.
I was wrong, as you can tell. Because there are particles still capable of joy. and you can tell. Because
what are you calling a particle?
I have particles that are feeling joy right now because the Cubs won. But it was fun at the game because you kind of started a trend, and everybody was picking out their the most attractive cub.
Ah,
in,
yes.
In the infield.
That's my baby bear. No, yeah. That's my baby bear.
Yeah, that was new.
Sorry, Chris and Addison and Javi. We know, we understand that we're not actually dating you.
But it's kind of funny because, like, I mentioned Alex at the Inciting Incident podcast, and he was a Cleveland fan. And I'm like, oh boy. And I just met him at the when we did a streamathon for Light the Night for Atheist Nomads.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, do we fight now? Or what?
Showdown of Atheist podcasters.
Like, what the heck? One more thing about the Cubs, and then I think I'll wrap this up, which is...
Kyle Schwarber.
Schwarber, yes. Kyle Schwarber. Everybody was like, so here's Kyle Schwarber's story, which is pretty amazing if you're not a baseball person. Tore the crap out of his leg.
In like April of this
year. In like April. Had to miss the entire freaking season. He was cleared by the doctors to hit, but not to field.
Mm-hmm.
Right before... Game one of the World Series, which is at Cleveland, which means the DH rule is in effect, which means he can play.
Right.
And he goes in and he hits a home run. I mean, his stats for, what were his stats? I mean, his OBS was 500.
Which doesn't make much sense for a guy that has a torn up knee that's allowed to run.
So, you know, my friends, you know, who are Mariners fans or whatnot, does that not vindicate the DH rule for you? I'm like, absolutely not. It shows you what a sty the DH rule is. The guy cannot play baseball forever, does 3 days of batting practice, and rocks a game. Come on, man. As much as I love seeing Schwarber do it, it was great to watch, and it's incredibly great for stories. No, it's not. This is no vindication of the DH rule.
This isn't an indemnification?
Absolutely.
Back in the day, the Mariners' most famous DH, and the person the DH award is named after, the Edgar Martinez Designated Hitter Award.
Yeah.
I'd say once or twice a season, he would try and steal a base, and that was always the funniest thing you've ever seen in your life.
It's when you realize it. It's the moment you realize that electrons move actually very slowly.
It's like he can swing the bat really well. That is his talent.
Yeah. And he's not in the Hall of Fame.
No, yet. He's not, and I think he should be. And it's your compatriots in the NL that are keeping him out. I understand where they're coming from. I feel like putting him in the Hall of Fame legitimizes the DH rule in a way the National League does not want to happen.
No.
And so I get that, but at the same time, he is the best player of a specific position in the history of the game who has an award named after him. He belongs in the Hall of Fame.
Well, they named the award after him because he's not making it into the Hall of Fame. That's part of the politicking there.
I don't know about that because they named the award after him. I think he was still playing at the time.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
Okay, that's weird.
Yeah, it's been called that for quite a while.
Yeah.
That's like having a stamp with your face on it while you're still alive.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's less cool. But, you know, it's like, I don't want to legitimize the DH rule. I actually don't really like it. And I think what we're seeing with this World Series and with the last few playoff games is that the pitching isn't better with the DH rule because they're consistently, because
National League has been winning lately.
Yeah, NL teams continue to be competitive. So I don't know what the DH rule is for. I don't know what it does.
To allow a guy to sit out the entire season.
Yeah.
Get
to allow
RBIs.
The Cubs to win the World Series. Sold. Fine. All right. people have been debating the DH rule for 50, 60 years, and it'll be 50 or 60 years more. Right. Things I do like. I am completely 180 on this. I like the play challenge. I like the fact that you can challenge plays. I thought I was going to hate it because I remember instant replay in the NFL when I was 4 or 5 or 6 or 7. It would
take
20 minutes. And football games became these 7-hour slogs that, you know, okay, they weren't 7 hours, but man, it felt like it.
Yeah.
Where these things take 4 minutes tops. They're only allowed two before the seventh inning, two after the seventh inning. And they're very quick. And it seemed...
And they're getting the calls right.
And they're getting the calls right.
And it feels a lot nicer, so it doesn't feel like, you know, you would have won that game had the ump actually had their eyes open.
Yeah.
Right.
The umps like it. I like it. It's cool. I think it.
We're losing our Lou Piniella moments, though.
We are.
Those were.
But we're not losing the stupid fights.
True.
Yeah. Was it the Walgreens? Or rather, the Nationals.
The Washington Nationals.
And the Pirates proved that at the end of the season.
Oh, my God. A hockey game broke out on the diamond.
The other thing I will like, and I'll end on this, and we'll return to our normal things, is that the Major League Baseball propaganda that they air before, during, and after, you know... Join this wonderful religion of baseball. And actually, if you like statistics and you like math, baseball is your sport. You can major in it. and they are featuring little, you know, like kids playing baseball, saying these are going to be our future Hall of Famers, future right fielder. And they're featuring girls, future trailblazer, stuff like that.
Awesome.
And that means... I'd like to think that that's maybe baseball getting ready for
an integrated league,
which I'm in favor of, definitely.
I could go for that.
Yeah, I like that a lot. And the fact that you've got, maybe they're just doing it for extra points, maybe they're doing it just to look nice, but if that's really what they're doing, that would be really cool. I would like that a lot.
Yeah.
Baseball! This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we're not going to talk about baseball. We're going to talk about weirder things.
The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of freethinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. Come celebrate life with us. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking and hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. You can become a member of the Humanists of Washington at humanistsofwashington.org. You'll get our quarterly publication, The Secular Humanist Press. Check out meetup.com where you can be part of our monthly Seattle dinner and our Heathens Do It Better breakfast. Humanists of Washington.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Doran, and we want to ask you an important question.
Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio Versus the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
Allegedly, soccer is a beautiful game.
It is when you know what's going on.
That's the problem. MLS is 20 years old, and people are still shocked to hear that there's an American Soccer League.
That's why you and I are talking about it. This is a discussion of American soccer for nerds and beginners. It's a good first step if a crippling soccer addiction is something that's missing from your life.
Join the club. Celebrate the 20th anniversary of MLS by actually following the season.
Hands-free football. New episodes every week at handsfreefootball.com.
I want to bring it back, but it's more than basic.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842, and I totally lied to you.
Are we talking more baseball?
I have two very quick things, but not necessarily related to the... Well, no, definitely related to the World Series. One, it was a very emotional night for me, and I got... I kind of downplay that because I generally downplay it when I get melancholy. For reasons which are probably fairly obvious. But thinking about my grandpa John, who used to sequester himself, like had a specific room in his condo that was solely for watching Harry Carey and the Cubs. And he would grab his old style and he would go in the room and shut himself off. Didn't matter what we were doing. If the family was over, I'm watching the Cubs game. Sometimes I watch games with him. He lived and died, Cubs not having won a World Series. And this would have been amazing to watch with him. And so I got to mention that. And the other thing is, not all All-Star games are terrible. I actually like the minor league All-Star game. That's a lot of fun because it's a showcase for players who want to make it, and if they make it to the AAA All-Star game, their prospects generally improve.
Right.
Because, when you talk about minor league baseball, there's a bit of an aspirational edge to it. So an All-Star game kind of makes sense there, which is nice. Because it's here this year. It's here in Tacoma.
Right. Yeah, 2017.
Yeah, 2017. And
I like All-Star games where they do something interesting. The NHL for a couple of years, I'm not sure if they still do this, but instead of doing like Eastern versus Western or this conference versus that conference, what they did was American players versus international players. So
yeah.
All the Russians, the Canadians, the Czechs were on one team, and all the American players were on another, and then they played each other.
Right.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. Okay. No more sports. We might die if we keep this up, even though you and I have talked about sports for 90 minutes.
Yeah. Aneurysm, coronary infarct, asthma attack.
Yeah.
Let's name the ways.
Or murder.
That too.
Assassination.
Yeah. Arsenic. So we do have a couple of announcements. One of them is very important if you're in Washington State. Humanists of Washington and Seattle Atheists, along with the University Unitarian Humanists, cordially invite free thinkers and their families and friends from Seattle and beyond to celebrate the coming winter solstice with their annual solstice potluck on Saturday, December 10th from 5 to 8 p.m. at the University Unitarian Church in Seattle.
And this year, something really exciting. We're encouraging attendees to bring socks, new socks, to donate to Treehouse. That's an organization benefiting foster youth in the greater Seattle area.
Yeah, and children are, clearly welcome to be a part of this celebration. And we'll have some craft activities for them. We welcome... Oh, this is definitely written by Becky. Welcome teens who wish to help facilitate and assist us with this. Blah, blah. I haven't done a cold read in a while. Pardon me. That's why I'm starting with the announcements, starting with the stuff that, I get. I'm solely responsible for. For more information, visit humanistsofwashington.org or seattleatheist.org. Ask an atheist, and most of us generally make it to this. This is the one... I like this holiday event. It's usually a lot of fun.
This is when you cook, right?
This is when I cook. Yeah. If you want to see me cook, and I don't know if I'm cooking this year. They may kick me out of the kitchen this time. But yeah, I am generally in the kitchen for a lot of it. And
It is a potluck.
Yeah. So it's a lot of fun. So I hope to see you there. I'd also like to thank Peggy from Kent, and Erica from Seattle, Samantha from Twisp, and Paul from Ashford, all in Washington, and then Movie Man, David, Clint, Jared, and Nick from the internet for meeting Peggy's Challenge. Peggy's Challenge is the challenge to the listeners of Ask an Atheist by Peggy from Kent, who you may have just heard in that list, for helping us keep the lights on. Every dollar you give us goes directly towards show production. You can go to our website, askanatheist.tv, click on the yellow button on the right-hand side. That's still the case, even though we have a new theme. And it'll take you directly to our PayPal page. Again, every dollar you give us goes directly towards show production. I should also mention my Patreon. You can go to Patreon. You can also go to our website, and right around that Peggy's Challenge button is our Patreon. Again, every dollar you give to the Patreon account goes to not just producing Ask an Atheist, but also producing great shows like Hands-Free Football and a bunch of other stuff. It keeps this studio going, and it'll help me get on the road for doing some stuff for Refutationalist, and I will have some really interesting news. We're already in on some production on some stuff, but I can't really talk about it yet. Really, really fun stuff on that front coming very soon.
Cool.
All right, so do you want to talk about the other stuff that everybody has been asking us about?
Yeah.
Yes, please.
A billboard put up by a Nebraska atheist group was removed after people threatened to boycott the business where the billboard was located. Lincoln Atheists paid to post an ad saying, "The good life without God? It's possible for 1 month." Hai Dao, the owner of the gas station next to the billboard, contacted Lamar Advertising, the owners of the sign, and requested they remove it after numerous customers threatened to take their business elsewhere. Lamar Advertising took down the billboard and refunded Lincoln Atheists the full cost. Brian Aden of Lincoln Atheists said the group isn't upset with Lamar Advertising, but is disappointed because they didn't think there was anything offensive on the billboard.
Hello, we exist. We are so offensive.
I feel the need to clarify in my writing of this that the good life without God, it's possible, is what it said, not the good life without God. It's possible for 1 month.
Right.
Only 1 month.
Until you read that, I didn't notice that, oh, that doesn't quite roll the right way.
We should make that billboard. The good life, it's possible for a month.
But yeah, this is an example. We've seen numerous examples of this around the country of the most innocent, non-offensive, blasé statements. Just like, we exist. If you are like us, you can come talk to us. And people are offended by that because it's not anything we believe that's offensive. It's the fact that we exist that is offensive to this class of believer.
Right, right. Yeah, I gotta say, I'm with Lincoln Atheist here. I don't think, you know, this isn't really the fault of Lamar Advertising. It'd be nice if the guy who owned the gas station would stand up for it, but it's his property. Right. You know, he's allowed.
And he said, like, I had no problem with the billboard. It was great, but I had so many customers complaining about it, I had to do something. Like,
right.
It's you know, I'd leave it if I could.
Right. Well, I guess that then becomes the question, what is the point of the billboard? The point of the billboard is advertising, is raising awareness. It's you know, bringing the world's attention to the fact that atheists live pretty much everywhere you look.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that there is now, you know, you get a little bit of the Streisand effect here. They wanted the thing taken down. Now Lincoln Atheists is getting a lot more attention than they would have gotten otherwise.
Yeah, I don't think the point of the billboard is to put this gas station owner out of business.
No, not at all.
So,
well, I don't know the guy.
Well, he didn't have a problem with it. He was all cool with it being there.
So he says.
Yeah.
That's what they say.
Yeah, cue the Unsolved Mysteries music. Anyway.
No, I think Lincoln Atheists, I think all three parties here are saying, this is really unfortunate, but, you know, we got to be able to stay in business. And, you know, Lamar Advertising saying, you know what, we're going to refund you the entire amount because this is a really unfortunate, you know, incident, an event. They didn't have to do that. They could say, hey, it was up for this many days. We're going to prorate you, you know, for this. So, I mean, all around, I don't think these three parties are, you know, any of them are offensive. I think that it's really just the unfortunate state of our you know, sort of culture that could put someone out of business for saying, hey, I wanted money for, you know, advertising for these guys. I'm not affiliated with them at all.
I wonder if we were to do bus ads up here in Seattle again, like we did with Seattle Atheists in 2009 and 2010.
What do you wonder?
Yeah, I wonder if the response would be the same, because we got a lot of pushback from those ads, and the bus company actually changed a lot of their advertising practices to cover for that fact, where you couldn't just advertise, you had actually have to sell something.
Mm-hmm.
And Seattle Atheist wasn't selling anything, so we couldn't do the ads. You know, I wonder if that would get the same ire that it drew.
I think there are even more people now within the Seattle area that don't affiliate or associate with any particular religion than there were, you know, 7 years ago when we did this.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's an interesting question, but you know, I'm sorry their billboard had to come down, but I'm glad that Lincoln Atheist is getting the attention that they sorely obviously require. Because let's be honest with here, the villains here may be the population of citizens of Lincoln, Nebraska, who find the existence of atheists offensive.
The people who complained about this, the people who went into a business completely unrelated to, who just happens to have billboard space on his property that he leases out, and somebody else unrelated to him put this billboard up. I want to go to them and say, what is the statement that is okay with you, that we're trying to find other people to come to our meetings, people who agree? We're not advertising to you. I don't care if you don't come to our meeting. You don't have to. But this is how we reach out. The same way your church puts up a billboard to reach out to people to get them to come to your church. What's the statement that we can make that will not offend you?
Exactly. I don't think there is one, apparently. Yeah.
There was a classic case in Philadelphia where they literally put the word atheists with a website, and that was seen as offensive.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you feel kind of awesome because even the name of what you are is offensive to some people. But at the end of the day, that's lame.
Yeah.
You know, it moves us away from the table where, you know, where civic discussion happens, which is important in stuff like dare I say. I don't know that I want to break the seal on this one, an election year. But, yeah, sorry to hear about that, about the billboard, but this is the reason we continue to do the show even into 2016 and 2017.
Right.
To be honest with you. Okay. next story here. Christian movie reviewers have been warning their readers against seeing the new Marvel film Doctor Strange because it might lead them to the occult. The film tells the story of a talented doctor learning about mystical powers after he loses his ability to perform surgery. Dr. Ted Baer, chair of the Christian Film and Television Commission, released a statement calling the film a dangerous introduction to demonic cult deception. And the Christian organization Movie Guide said the film positively presents an occult worldview that all true Christians should recognize as destructive.
True Christians. I love the rating system of this guy. It goes from -1, which is caution, to -4, which is abhorrent. And Doctor Strange earned an abhorrent rating.
So there's no even a zero mark where doesn't
neutral
isn't a problem. I think, or is it just movies that he doesn't review or assume neutral? Or
I think that there are like good Christian movies, you know, probably starring Kirk Cameron as a firefighter or something. That like I don't know what the positive scale is, but but Doctor Strange does not end up on the positive scale or the neutral scale.
No, but you know what? I'm going to say something a little shocking here. Doctor Strange leads people to the occult. True. I've seen it happen.
All right. You know, it's interesting you put it that way because I loved this Movie Guide review. I suggest you go out and find this review because it's hilarious. Because they talk about the fact...
We'll put it in the show notes.
Awesome.
Okay.
They talk about the fact that the movie exists, and then all the reasons it's terrible are because in the 70s, people read Doctor Strange comments and followed the occult. And then they start talking about Lord of the Rings, and they talk about Harry Potter and all this stuff. And there is not a single thing in this entire review about the film itself.
Has he actually seen the movie?
I don't think he has.
It's time we take a proactive stand on what we find tolerable or harmless, especially in the movies, to which our children and grandchildren expose themselves. Just this year alone, Kung Fu Panda 3 very blatantly preached Buddhist teachings, and Kubo and the Two Strings encouraged children to pray to their ancestors while having the hero make the loony comment that nothing is eternal.
Yes, this was in the review.
You know, the loony comment that nothing is eternal. The loony comment nothing is eternal that is only backed by science.
Yes, pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah, this is his review. His review is not, hey, this movie I have issues with. This review is, there is a class of movies that I don't want to exist. And this happens to be one of them, even though I'm not going to explain why.
Yeah.
Well, let's protest the hell out of that station.
Like, I'll be honest with you. I met a couple people in the New Age movement when I was one of those, or whatever you call it, who were very influenced by Doctor Strange and comic books. Were they outright evil, horrible people who were infested by demons?
Yes.
Obviously not. Well, I guess no more than I am, which is not at all. Therefore, given that, you know, demons don't actually exist, they're not really a thing. But... yeah, okay, this is a fun laugh.
It just, to me, it's like there is this thing, this concept that people who write these reviews don't understand, and that is fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, these are stories. We use magic as a tool in the story to make things happen. Doesn't mean that those tools are actually exist. What we like about fiction is someone can do magic to solve a problem, because in the real world you can't, and it's kind of boring.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't understand how you can't make that leap, that it's a fictional story, so therefore what's in it is by definition not true.
Well, you can't make the leap when you say that everything in the Bible is literally 100% accurately true and the word of God, and it said that bats are birds. And insects have four legs.
I wonder what this guy would have thought of the Narnia movies. I guess that would be the thing that I would look up. That would be a good baseline.
That's a good question.
Because it's Christian fiction.
I mean, if these guys want to cover their eyes and say, don't look at this because it's not biblical, blah, 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 they're allowed. But it does create, you end up creating a population of people who just, you know, can't get along with anybody who disagrees with them, can't do the thing that allows a country like the United States to exist without constant warfare.
I actually have more respect for the Calvinist view, the idea that you can't read fiction because writing fiction is writing something that is not true and therefore is a lie and therefore it's prohibited by the Bible.
I hope there's some sarcasm in when you say respect there.
Well,
it's not.
It's logically consistent, at least.
Yeah, I wouldn't say.
Okay, I can appreciate
sarcasm so much as low bar.
Right. Okay, the story that I don't really want to talk about. Former pastor and atheist activist Teresa McBain has announced that she has returned to belief in God again. McBain famously came out as an atheist during the Reason Rally in 2012 and was one of the first graduates of the Clergy Project, a support group for pastors who have lost their faith. McBain has been an activist for the secular community in the years since, but after spending a couple months outside the limelight, McBain wrote on her website that the power of music and unconditional love of family friends has led her back to faith. She is now working on creating safe spaces for believers who are questioning their faith.
This is a strange one. We tend to celebrate sort of big stories of like famous believers who lose their faith and suddenly, you know, join our ranks, which I think any group would. I think that's perfectly normal. I feel like to some degree, atheism doesn't get a lot of the other direction. There's not very stories like this don't happen very often where someone left their faith, came to us, and then decided to rejoin their faith.
Yeah, I haven't seen many examples of it, but there is a sort of a burgeoning community of ex-atheists who tour churches and get paid for it. Kirk Cameron being one of those, where he talks about how he was totally an atheist before he became a incredibly debilitating Christian.
I don't see Teresa McBain going in this direction, though. She says that specifically it was stripping away the childhood indoctrination and moving towards, you know, through this foray into atheism, moving back towards faith that is radically inclusive, open, compassionate. And to someone who had, you know, perhaps grown up with any kind of orthodoxy, any kind of fundamentalism, seeing that there wasn't a way to be, you know, a moderate, faithful believer without having that fundamentalism, you know, maybe that wasn't open to her. And if she's back at that place, then and because of unconditional love, what I see there is perhaps she didn't find unconditional love within the atheist community. And I think that that's a fault of non-believers.
I don't believe in unconditional love. There's no such thing. I'll open up with that. When we call it unconditional love, it means that there's nothing you can do that, you know. And I don't think that's a thing that should exist. And two, it is not a thing I have actually ever seen. Everybody has their breaking point. Even parents and children. I've seen it all at this point.
So perhaps maybe unconditional support in the face of mistakes?
I'll go back to what we said the last time we had Teresa McBain on the show, which was a couple years ago on an episode, if you want to search it up. Dave, I believe you named it. It's called Redemption Song. Where it was after the situation with Harvard humanists and what's that?
The Duke Law School or Duke Divinity?
Yeah, the Duke MDiv degree, which she claimed to have, which she didn't, and she may have culpated on that and owned it. Maybe not the way everybody would like, but she apologized and she said she lied.
Right,
which I think is the beginning and the end. If there has ever been anything which would drive me away from the atheism community and find a new identity for myself that allows me to be a little feel a little bit more respect for myself. It would be the way the community has treated Teresa McBain.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be honest with you, because I'll go back. And I think I'll do a rare thing and say, this might be a place where religions have something on us. Catholicism in particular, but a lot of religions have basically a path to getting back on people's good side. They have what they might call redemption, but they have some sort of process by which people can atone, apologize, whatever you want to call it. And then try to move forward with their lives, not having to continually live their lives with this freaking albatross around their neck.
Mm-hmm.
I was really disappointed when Teresa McBain, when it turns out that she lied about that, because I thought Teresa McBain, working with Harvard humanists, degrees or not, would have been a great thing for the community if it was actively. If it was actively approached, because they were Harvard humanists at the time was talking about a much more nationwide approach to what they've been doing the whole time in their neck of the woods. And Teresa McBain was going to front that. Teresa McBain lost that job. That thing that Harvard humanists and Greg Epstein were talking about didn't pan out the way that they were talking about it when they had Teresa McBain, all because of this fraud,
mm-hmm.
which fraud it was. I would have liked to have seen some way for her to make amends, some way for her to get it. She could get on her good side again. But even now, every time she's back in faith, et cetera, et cetera. Oh, she's returned to faith. I don't really care. What really bothers me is the comment section, which I understand don't read the comments, but this is my community. And 90% of the freaking comments is, well, she lied about her degree, so I don't care.
Hmm.
Yeah, she's terrible. She's a horrible human being. Terrible, horrible human being. Doesn't deserve any care from us, any concern whatsoever.
The speculation that the foray into atheism was a fraud, was a ruse, just to then return to the church to get money. This is a woman who was flat out after losing that particular job. This is someone who has struggled tremendously within society, within her family structure. She's gone back to school to be a full-time student,
yeah.
Having very little educational background that would be accepted within a larger employment community. This is someone who is working and who has worked to support individuals her entire life, both familial and within any of the communities that she's been in.
Right.
And to speculate that this was all a ruse, a further fraud to make money, is one, laughable, two, insulting.
Yeah, I mean, there were other former pastors who came out as atheists during that time. It wasn't just Teresa McBain.
Are we talking Jerry DeWitt?
Yeah, we're talking Jerry DeWitt, who did, I think, 3 hours all told on his podcast all about this. And there's a reason for it. They connected. They were involved in the clergy project. And we originally interviewed, the first time we interviewed Teresa McBain was immediately after she was at the Reason Rally in 2012. Right after she was at the Reason Rally, she and Jerry DeWitt flew out here to Washington, I think basically to talk to Rich Lyons,
mm-hmm.
Who's producing, who does Living After Faith and is actually back to producing it right now. And that was one of the most emotional episodes I ever did. And you can't do that interview. You can't listen to this person talk in front of a microphone and away from a microphone and to get the sense of the kind of person that this is. And to think that this was all a ruse or all some sort of con.
Mm-hmm.
And more to that, that's just laughable and stupid. And if you believe that, you're wrong. And I question your intelligence.
I look at the entire situation and I look at part of what happened when she joined our community is she was really afraid and dealt with a lot of blowback from her previous community. Like mm-hmm. they were unwilling to accept that she was going to make this change in her life.
Yeah.
And I want to take this chance to implore everyone I can, let's not make the same mistake. And I think we already have.
We have. That cat is already out of the bag.
But I want, like, we have an opportunity to have somebody who's experienced the best of our community as well as the worst. Mm-hmm. And what side we show her in this place where she's leaving us and going back to her faith, I think can very much influence down the road. Do we have an ally who, you know, we've always wanted people, more than people, to join our ranks. We wanted the understanding. We're not evil. We're not terrible. We're good people. We just believe differently. If we have somebody who in the faith who can explain to them, no, I've been there. They're not evil. They're not demonic. They're not Satanists. You know, she could easily be a big help to us, even from being in the faith. And I think it's our reaction to her, I wish her the best. I wish her happiness. I thank her for what activism she did when she was with us. And I wish nothing but good things for her now that she's gone back to her faith. And I hope the rest of the community can understand that sentiment at least.
Right. Right. Well, I agree with that mostly. I mean, I don't like the fact that she's returned to faith, and I don't like the fact that she's like basically like, okay, the thing that I did is bad. I now need to. It's not just that she's returned to the faith; it's that she thinks her whole the way that she's now. What? How was it in the brief?
Well, she's a musician. She now forms a skeptic group within her church of people who are needing a safe space to express their doubts.
Safe spaces for believers who are questioning their faith kind of scares me, because it just looks like she's decided to take what she's learned from the atheism community and maybe create places of further indoctrination. That concerns me.
Mm.
I will not lie. That bothers me a little. But of course it's going to bother me. It's somebody who I had a very emotional experience with 4 years ago, who's kind of gone completely back on the emotional experiences we had. That doesn't make those emotional experiences not real. It doesn't make it a con. It doesn't make it a fraud.
Right.
The other thing is, if there is, I really think the writing was on the wall for this, and I thought so at the time. I said so off the air. I don't know if I said it on the air. But the writing was on the wall for this to happen after the rejection from Harvard Humanists, and the atheism community just kind of left her alone. She was having trouble making ends meet, and this idea that people want money so that they can feed their freaking families and that somehow makes them less honest or less human is ridiculous and needs to stop. That's just stupid. But nobody was going into this thinking that they were going to become rich by becoming an atheist. I don't know anybody who has actually had.
Well, we're swimming in money, aren't we, Sam?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, my sugar mama's a school teacher. Let that sink in, okay? It feels like there's an ideological leper community in the atheism movement. I'm not talking about people who have terrible beliefs and won't go back on those terrible beliefs and won't let evidence challenge them and just treat people terribly. I'm talking about people who maybe, you know, lie about something, maybe went to prison for something, maybe had an idea that was bad, maybe was a little bit racist once upon a time, and has since become educated and knows better now. It doesn't look like there's a path back. There doesn't look like there's a redemption song here in the atheism community. It seems like there is a place, and I've hesitated to talk about this for so long on the air, but Teresa McBain kind of makes it obvious to me. I think sometimes we are too focused on ideological purity here in the atheism community. And for stuff that I care about very much. I mean, there are people we have had on the show that just don't talk to us anymore because we have opinions they don't like, or have had opinions they don't like. And let me tell you something, that scares me. And if this is the way we as a community have treated Teresa McBain, is an indicator of how we treat people in our community we don't like. I don't want to be a part of this. I don't want to be in this party anymore. I think I'd like to be on a different boat, because I've been talking for 6 years. I've had a few missteps. I've said some things I wish I could take back, but can't. I got 20 more years of talking in me, at least. I'm going to screw up once. Mm-hmm. At least once. And I'm going to screw up bad. And it's going to question your... It's going to question your respect for me. It's going to question your belief in my sanity. It's going to question your belief in my convictions for equality and freedom and everything that I stand for as a humanist. I'm going to make that mistake. I absolutely guarantee. I get lazy. I get sad. I get depressed, whatever. I'll snap or something and I'll say something that I can't take back. And it would be nice to know that if I say something that I hate or that is wrong, that either I wish I could take back immediately or would like to take back in retrospect, I would like a space to be able to do that. And I don't really think the atheism community has it. I really don't think we do. And if there is no way for me to come back from a catastrophe I know is waiting in the wings for the kind of human being that I am and the kind of mistakes I have made in my past, I don't think this is the place for me. I can't walk on eggshells my whole life. I will say something stupid. I may say something sexist. I may say something racist. I may. I may already have. I'd like to be able to say I was wrong and have the community accept that. Yeah, maybe my reputation is hurt. Maybe I don't do the show anymore. But I'd still like to be a part of the community. And right now, I feel like that isn't possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like Theresa McMain has pointed that out on her exit. And that bothers me. And that scares me. Maybe we have a talk about that. You know, this is kind of like the conversation I had after she left, where it's like, did she leave? Was she fired from Harvard Humanists because she doesn't have an advanced degree? Because it's Harvard. They love their you know, masters and PhD programs. And they absolutely should. But as somebody who doesn't even have a high school degree behind him, does that mean my voice counts less?
Mm-hmm.
In some places it does. When we're talking about, you know, I don't know, quantum chromodynamics or evolution or whatever, I'm not the guy to talk to. You know what I mean? But when I'm talking about what it's like being an atheist in America in 2016, I think my voice counts for something. I think I have pretty good interviewing skills. And mm-hmm. I think I've brought that to bear here.
Right.
Fortunately, Greg Epstein actually reached out to me and said that was not it at all. And I fully believe him. This one is going to be a lot harder for me to believe that there's a path here. And I won't lie. I have been scared. I have been scared for some time. And for years now, since yay about 2012, if you're a show historian. And I think I will continue to be scared in the future, and I don't think there's an easy answer to take that fear away from me. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about hot dogs, I think.
Something a little lighter. Yeah. Are we back to baseball?
No.
Has Ngadwe Trust invaded your town? Are you tired of government officials who want to plaster "In God We Trust" on taxpayer-owned property? Are you afraid because your local sheriff placed an "In God We Trust" decal on the patrol cars? We are here to help. The original motto project is for those who feel the separation of church and state is an important issue and should be honored regardless of your belief or lack thereof. Theists, non-theists, and all free thinkers are welcome. We need your support to show politicians that diversity exists within our nation, and their promotion of a monotheistic religion and push for theocracy will not be tolerated. Stand up and be heard. Join us at originalmotto.us.
Billy!
Not again!
Billy, I'm a certified ghost expert!
Wow, that's so credible!
Billy, your great-great-grandmother says she loves you, and to give me your lunch money!
Aw, anything for family! Here you go!
Wait, Billy! Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence! Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp!
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I know.
48 hours. 24 hours, 10 minutes to go.
The motorcade appears to have stopped, and yes, it appears as though the governor is getting out now. It's hard to see. My God, the rain is it's coming down in sheets. I've never seen anything like this. There must be tens of thousands of people out here right now. The streets are shut down. Okay, it appears the governor is making his way toward the convention center. No one knows what he's going to say. The crowd is pushing forward through the storm. The Secret Service is struggling to hold them back. A wave of people are rushing toward the candidate. My God.
Zero. For your consideration, we present Convention and its subject, the nominee, ANNEXradio.com, now on iTunes and Stitcher.
My name is Jonathan Ariola of TDTF Pod. The more voices you hear, the more we observe and feel, the more we learn about the other facets of this complex and wondrous beast that is humanism and free thought. Join me on the science-loving journey through topics like justice, murder, family, diligence, taste, history, society, race, boob jobs, law, addiction, video games, fear, sacrifice, children. Wait, not sacrificing children, that's not what I meant. Bring the popcorn and watch me break down the issues too deep, too fast. Join me at TDTF Pod. I'm Jonathan Ariola. Talk to you soon.
Right, we're recording. This is Ask an Atheist. 844-SKEPTIC. 844-753-7842. That's what happens when you listen to the previous episode the day, you know, right before you record. Is like, oh yeah, okay, we're coming out of a commercial. Wait, no, I'm coming out of a commercial. Crap. All right, so I think I teased with hot dogs, yeah?
Yes.
A Malaysian governmental religious group has declared that hot dogs must be renamed. The Islamic Development Department worries that the name could be confusing because in Islamic culture, dogs are seen as unclean. Food sellers who refuse to change the name risk losing their halal certification. Under Malaysian halal guidelines, halal food may not be named after non-halal foods like ham or beer. Malaysian Tourism and Culture Minister Nasri Aziz insisted that there is nothing wrong with the name and admonished the group, saying, please do not make us seem stupid and backward. While Malaysia is considered a moderate Muslim nation, conservative attitudes have grown in recent years. So I was really sorry we couldn't find anything about peanuts or crackers around this episode.
That's a thematic sort of integration. I like it.
Because in addition to loving baseball, I really like hot dogs.
Here's the thing, let me go back to the Shakespearean, would a rose by any other name smell as sweet? Like, hot dogs are great.
Yeah.
If you can eat them, or the fact that they're named after something, like, does the name change how good they taste?
I don't like dogs at all. I agree. Dogs are unclean. Dogs are horrible things. They should be shot into the sun. I have no problem eating hot dogs.
Yes.
It doesn't confuse you that perhaps you might be eating canine meat in...
I don't know. I've had some hot dogs in some pretty questionable places. It's not out of the question that my hot dogs have actually contained dog. But...
It does remind me, actually, of Jewish kashrut laws, so the dietary restrictions laws, where in the same vein that you cannot name a food after something that would not be dietarily acceptable, my very religious grandmother would not stand for her toddler infant granddaughter playing with a stuffed piggy animal because pigs are not kosher. Yeah. And so she actually took my stuffed animal and burned it.
Holy crap.
Yes, literally.
Wow.
So, this is something that
I... Did I know that?
I don't know, but this is something that I was told by my parents about how ridiculous it would be to take dietary restriction laws to such an extreme that, you know, clearly a kid is not eating their stuffed animal. Well, I mean, that's not exactly true because, you know, toddlers drool and chomp.
But it's not actually...
Stuffed animals aren't made of ham.
Right, yeah.
Right.
A stuffed pig is not actually made out of pork. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I want one now. But that's neither here nor there.
stuffed pork, pulled pork.
Pulled pork.
There we
Definitely
go.
Pulled pork. I'm a barbecue kind of guy.
But just in the way that a moderate Jewish family says, you know, no, my kids can play with barnyard animals without having to burn the pig,
yeah.
Right? you know, this tourism and culture minister says, please, really, we can tell the difference between something named hot dog and, yeah.
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 It's one of those things, like, sort of one of the basic concepts of what we talk about on the show is, like, is there anything religion can't screw up? Like, hot dogs are about as easy as it gets.
Black holes. Hard to get there.
I'm sure they could find a way.
The acceptance of black holes as an actual thing, as portrayed in
I'm not saying our understanding of black holes. That ship has already sailed.
Black holes themselves.
Yeah, black holes themselves.
Where they're like, my logic, it fell in.
That's the black hole winning, not religion.
Yeah, man, this is just a weird religious thing. They shouldn't do this. Hot dogs are not actually dogs, but
I thought most of them were made with at least some pork product. I mean, honestly, I thought that would be the bigger
Hebrew
problem.
National,
well, no, that's why Hebrew National
the answer
is
to a higher authority.
And that's why the best hot dogs, as far as I'm concerned, being from where I'm from, is Vienna beef, which are all beef hot dogs.
Okay.
There are pork hot dogs out there. You can go buy them right now. But thanks to the Jewish community, we now have the true hot dog, which is a beef hot dog.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I like in Chile, hot dogs are called completos, which means complete, because you literally pile more stuff on a Chilean hot dog as street food than you do in your hometown, Sam.
Yeah, well, it's not about piling. It's about the right ingredients. I mean, a Chicago hot dog is sport pepper, celery, salt, mustard, relish, and not relish. No relish. And onions.
Yeah,
right?
The weird neon radioactive
the
ninja
cheap
turtle.
Relish,
yeah.
Not the good relish. and a pickle. But the pickle, what I do is I let the pickle sit on top of my hot dog for 3 or 4 minutes so that pickle vinegar kind of infuses the you know, more of the components. And then I set it aside. And then I eat the pickle separately.
I found when you go to...
like a two-course meal.
When you go to CenturyLink Field, there is a...
We're back to sports.
Alley... No, this is still food.
This is still food.
There's an alley where there's all sorts of food trucks before the game. We can go get your stuff. And there's like 5 different places to get hot dogs. And I finally found the one I like because they have their kielbasa dog. But it's like a full-on like Pepperidge Farm sort of art, you know, that you get at the grocery store kielbasa. They cut that in half and that is your hot dog. And it is giant.
Yeah. Well, kielbasa is a different thing entirely. I also like kielbasa. I mean,
right.
Yeah. I mean... Yeah, awful shoved in a tube. I'm definitely into it.
I've actually done this unit as a part of my Spanish curriculum, and so we look at hot dogs around the world in our food curriculum, and there's a great new kind of hot dog creation along the border, sort of in Tucson, Arizona, and then south of that, where you have an American hot dog, a beef hot dog, on a bolillo roll, so the Mexican breads, and then you can put like chili and salsa and onions on it and all sorts of stuff like that. Hot dogs are amazing. Apparently in Malaysia, they're no longer going to be called dogs, though.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah, what do you call them? Hot cows?
Why not?
Sure, that's beef.
You know what? I'm with you, Malaysia. They're hot cows now. No, they're holy cows.
Ooh, I like
holy
it.
Holy cow! I said I was done talking about baseball. All right, so this is Odd from Norway, and she writes... I'm writing to point out that Muslims that live above the Arctic Circle are not breatharians if Ramadan happens to be in the summer. They may decide to go with Mecca time or the nearest more reasonable day-night cycle. So it shouldn't be a big deal for them to establish a new arrangement regarding praying towards Mecca if they make an even bigger change than their latitude. I'm reminded of when Jakar in Babylon 5 missed out on performing a ritual that had to be timed according to sunlight, hitting a holy site on his home planet. And then they got around it by relying on doing it in time with when the light from several years previously reached the Babylon 5 station. I just watched that episode.
I love you. I love the reference of this. And Sam, forgive me, but when we were watching this for the very first time, when you were showing me this episode, I said, that's such a Jewish hack. That's such a good workaround. Like, my ancestral people were tremendously involved with finding these little hacks where it's like, well, technically, the light that would have hit this would have bounced back and would have taken this long to hit the space station, and so we're actually in time.
It's kind of like fasting when you drop the Torah.
Exactly. Yeah. You just split it up between all 40 people. So. But I also really like this one because it's talking about a religious mastery over time.
Yeah, to give this some context, I did essay a question I would ask a Muslim. This was the last week's episode, was it not?
I can't remember.
Because I think we were talking about Pascal's Wager, and I said Muslims might actually have a stupid space Muslim question button on their broadcast board.
Right, yes, okay.
Which is what happens if you're on Mars. Do you get like a free-floating system so that you can be pointed at Mecca, which I thought would be amazing. I mean that's some dedication. But it's a silly question. And so she's responding to this, and she's right. They don't not eat for an entire month. If they're above the Arctic Circle when Ramadan happens, they pick a time. They usually, I think they pick Mecca time or something like that.
And I imagine if you're actually in a high darkness sort of situation, that you actually still observe Ramadan even if the sun never rises and sets, if you happen to be on that
bit
side
of a
the
requirement.
World.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And though the thing is that humans' mastery or manipulation of time isn't just limited to religion. It's fun to laugh about it, you know, as look at what tricks religion plays and what hacks we do to fool our God, yeah. Right? Who are we fooling with this stupid daylight saving time? I mean, I'm happy that I got my fall extra hour.
No, we're beating
sleep.
The Soviets, Becky. Oh. We are beating the Soviets.
Still?
That's what this is about.
I thought it was about Cher. If you could turn back time. Oh. The meme's a bit out
I
there.
Quit.
I find that funny.
But I really like this. I like this email, and that's actually, I really like that episode of Babylon 5.
I love it, too.
It's a really good, that's a season one episode, is it not? It's the, is it by any means necessary? Is it the one where there's an accident in the loading bay and it's the strike one?
I'm actually unsure of that.
Okay. If it's the one I'm thinking of, it's the one where it's the episode about labor
unions.
Laws and unions. And they invoked something called the Rush Act, which is illegal, you know, and it's named after Rush Limbaugh. JMS made that very clear. And it is... It is a episode that shows religious people in a positive light, but it also happens to be one of my favorite religiously oriented episodes of Babylon 5. It's because it's kind of upbeat and it says, yeah, religion is mostly a hack.
It's a hack. And how can you accommodate someone's cultural, you know, traditions that are very important to them and still make them integrated with the greater society?
There's plenty of hard-hitting religious episodes in Babylon 5 if you want to go look. I think it's not the same season that has Believers, which is an episode I don't watch. but then there's the whole plague episode, which is pretty terrifying. So there's a lot of course I appreciate a Babylon 5 reference. Jeez.
Somebody knows their audience when they're writing their emails.
Oh, yeah. They know exactly who they're talking to. But thank you for the information and the answer. They'll probably come up with something. I do kind of wonder what they come up with. Next email says Roger from Edmonds, Washington, who writes, "Music and Atheist and Skeptic Podcasting, while on the whole good, misses a lot of licensed content that would fit into shows well, and I wonder if it could be made public the cost of license." Okay. "And I wonder if it could be made public the cost of licensing. In particular, I love Stevie Wonder's song Superstition. I can't believe of the numerous podcasts I listen to, it hasn't become bumper music or even played once as far as I remember. The whole refrain of the song is, if you believe in things you don't understand, then you suffer. Superstition ain't the way. I can't believe this song doesn't get more play in our community, and if you can let me or the community know you have a music fund, I donate it to in a heartbeat. Thank you very much, Roger." Superstition is a great freaking song.
That is an awesome song.
To say nothing of the lyrics.
Musically, yeah. It's just
musically,
that slap bass going on.
Once you hear that line, it stays in your head forever. There's a little part of my brain where that line is just go. It just never stops.
Right.
And
I for years, I did not give Stevie Wonder credit because when I was growing up, the only Stevie Wonder song anyone cared about was I Just Called to Say I Love You, which is a terrible song.
Listen, compared to his other stuff, it's a completely different thing. Yeah.
Then I heard his 70s stuff, and I'm like, oh my God, where was this? I mean, he is amazing. Okay, now I get why he's famous.
Yeah, I was like, let's be honest. I Just Called to Say I Love You isn't a terrible song. It's just not my kind of thing.
Yeah,
whereas 70s stuff is completely my kind of thing.
There's something about, and this is, forgive this rabbit trail, we're going to talk about music for a second.
Okay, but, that's fine.
There's something about bands in the 70s got crappy in the 80s. If you started in the 80s, chances are you're really good. But if you got started in the 70s, by the 80s, something happened. And I will suggest, say, Heart. The music Heart did in the 80s, These Dreams and...
Oh, yeah.
And that stuff. Compare that to Magic Man and Barracuda and all the great stuff they did in the 70s. They're like two entirely different bands.
My mom liked 80s Heart, so you are correct. Was Neil Young's electronic phase in the 80s? Or
yes. 81, Transported Man or...
Yeah. So by...
Are you providing an edge case here, Sam?
Well, not much of an edge case because everybody hates his electronic phase except me. So I guess I am. All right, so a little bit of background. When we were a radio show, we could actually, through the station, we were licensed to use music like Superstition. And I almost did use specifically Superstition for a couple episodes in like season 3 or season 4. What we don't have the rights to is to use that music on the podcast. And podcast licensing for music, I haven't checked recently, but it can't really be done on an ad hoc basis. It has to be like an ASCAP license or something like that. I don't claim to be an expert on this because it's been five years since I looked into it. Because right. I really wanted to be able to use, since I had the ability to do it on the air, I wanted to be able to use it on the air and then keep it on the podcast, which required my own separate licensing.
Right.
It ended up it being like number of downloads I expected per week and number of episodes I would use it in. And I couldn't just license one song. I had to get the ASCAP license. And it ended up being incredibly cost prohibitive. At the time, it was more than like two or three seasons of on the show when we were leasing time on the station.
Mm-hmm.
And so I will look into it again because this is the kind of thing I'm honestly curious about. And I will get back to you on this. But that was the reason why. If we get back on the air with a commercial station or with like an NPR affiliate or something like that, yeah, we could start using stuff like that because
right.
especially with the radio networks that podcast or stuff, a lot of their stuff, they've already paid for that licensing, and so we would be under that aegis.
Mm-hmm.
But
I know the podcasting world's kind of strange because there's a lot of very small time podcasts that honestly ASCAP is gonna have trouble finding,
right?
And so a lot of them will just play whatever they want.
We are not hard to find.
Well, it's not just we are not hard to find, but that's a risk. Like, that's a risk we're not willing to take.
Even
on my show, which is much smaller, much smaller than anything else you probably even listen to, but the cost benefit of like if we get sued, like, they're going to take us for so much, and the benefit of just having nice bumper music is not...
Right. If the RIAA tosses us a lawsuit for using licensed music incorrectly on a podcast, Ask an Atheist is over.
Right.
My liability insurance kicks in, but for all intents and purposes, that would be the end of the show.
Yeah.
And possibly the end of my podcasting career.
And there's too much good open source music out there.
And that's the other side of it, is that there's a lot of music that doesn't get the light of day. We've met some really fantastic musicians who I follow on Facebook, who do shows that I otherwise wouldn't have without this interface. I tend to be a pretty stickler for this because religion gets a pass here and we don't.
Mm-hmm.
And so where religions can kind of fudge and... not care about licensing because nobody wants to be Nobody wants to be accused of
going after the nuns.
Going after the nuns, or
that
whatever.
Would be N-U-N.
Yeah. I don't have that kind of protection, so I tend to be kind of a stickler of it. Also, I'm an open source developer. I believe in this sort of free culture movement, and that's part of the reason why, you know, all ask. That's kind of the reason why I beg for money every episode. I won't lie, because I would like to be able to do some things that I'm not. But giving away this show is pretty important to me.
Mm-hmm.
So
I also think for our show, it's worth shouting out. We have gotten great music from listeners. Phil Whitfield has provided a lot of our bumper music, and it's
outstanding. He's done a metal version. He did the sci-fi. You're going to hear the version he's doing at the end of this. He does a fantastic work. If he has, I think he's got a website. I should link to it.
Yes, definitely.
Anyway,
and Chris Coleman,
who's here in Seattle, who did the original. Who did the original Ask an Atheist theme, which is pretty iconic to a lot of people. I won't lie. There's a million, which brings me to another thing that's been kind of on my ass. There's a million people I need to thank who I haven't thanked in a while. So I'm going to need to do something about that very, very soon. But we're already over time, so that's not going to be today. One more email, or how are you guys
doing? Sure.
Okay. This is Josie from California, who writes, I have a question since I do consider myself as a confused Catholic. I 50% believe God isn't real and 50% believe he is real. But most of my belief that he isn't real is due to my experience in the past and today as well. But my mind doesn't want to agree with what I feel. I have done my research and I find 97% he isn't real. But still my mind won't agree with what I see, sadly, even if I disagree with my mind. Is there any step I can take to let my mind believe how I feel is 100% true?
You're talking about that duality of your intellect and your emotional experience there. That's something that all humans sort of like wrestle with.
Yeah, and I love how this email totally captures that cognitive dissonance that happens in situations like this that I've heard a lot of people describe. I really like this email. It's hilarious.
Josie, you're a fantastic agnostic.
Yeah.
Is what you are.
Yeah.
And the fact is, like, I one of the things I like about this email is Josie is looking for 100%. She wants certitude. And certitude doesn't really exist.
Not on the question of deities and gods.
I mean, there is famously in The God Delusion, Richard Dawkins described the Dawkins scale, a 1 to 7, 1 being absolute certainty that a deity does exist, 7 being an absolute certainty that there is no God.
Right.
And even Dawkins says, I'm not a 7. Like,
no.
There has to be a room for some sort of doubt because these are not questions that can be proved implicitly. And so Dawkins is a 6 on the Dawkins scale. I'm a 6 on the Dawkins scale. And so Josie,
I'm a 6.97.
Yeah,
that's Josie's 97%. I don't know. Josie, you're talking about the difference between knowledge and what you feel and what you think and what you believe. So your feeling is still, you know, maybe your belief is that, okay, maybe there's God. You're making something approaching Pascal's wager, but I think that you're much more in-depth about it. You said, look, I've done a lot of research. Really, there doesn't seem to be very good evidence on it about the existence of God. And it's okay to not know whether God exists, but live your life in a great, good, compassionate way that God doesn't exist, and yet still be an excellent human being.
I feel like the last episode we aired, there was a question about a guy who has left his faith but still has an emotional fear of hell.
Yeah.
And this is kind of like that. Like, he was grown up taught to be afraid of a thing, and all the reason and all the evidence gets him only so far. There's still this emotional sort of bump he cannot get past. And maybe this is it for you, Josie. Maybe you've been raised to believe one thing and you spent years hearing people tell you this is the way things are, this is how you know the way things are. And even though you're now stepping out of that and finding the actual evidence, there's that emotional tie that you may never entirely get over. And that's okay.
Yeah, if you're listening for certitude, this clearly isn't the room. Because I'm certainly not certain But my certitude extends to the concept of any of a potential creator entity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really pretty quite certain that the God of the Bible and the God of the Quran and the Torah and whatever doesn't exist. Because they make specific claims which have been refuted.
Because we all know Shiva the Destroyer is what really exists.
Well, yeah.
What about Kukulkan of Mesoamericans?
That would be more fun. you know, the religions of humanity have made very clear claims that have been fairly clearly refuted. So that the gods they're worshipping just don't exist. But I think... I think what you're trying to do here, reading, looking, not just using your emotional, you know, just not thinking with your guts, not thinking with snap judges made by emotions, but you guys have already covered this. But this is the beginnings of an empirical view on religion, the empirical view on deity and the creators and religions and spirituality and all that. Just keep cultivating what you're doing, and I think you'll be a lot... You'll eventually kind of hit a state where you feel comfortable with the decision, whatever it is. Now, if you're trying to be empirical, I'm pretty sure I know how your decision is going to work out. Just look at the evidence. I mean, being empirical, looking at the evidence, and trying to build an understanding of the universe based on what we can prove or what we can come close to proving or what appears to happen when these conditions... I mean, we're talking about the stuff that made science possible, the stuff that makes this podcast possible. That's how we got here. So I think that's I really do think that's the right track.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Wish you the best on your journey.
Yeah, indeed. All right. So Becky wants me to break the seal again, but fully break the seal open. Do we do that as a closer?
Certainly. Can I?
Yeah, go ahead.
I am completely surprised at how little, in the last maybe 6 months or so, religion has come into our presidential election.
You know, that is an interesting thing. I have been so depressed by this election that I have completely missed that, but you are absolutely right.
It's all about emails and xenophobia and yeah. Who beats up whom at rallies, and none of it has had much to do with which god the candidates are swearing allegiance to.
Yeah.
And it seems like most of the major stories when it comes to this is just some evangelical is screaming about something and everyone's like, you're dumb.
Wrong! No!
So I don't know, though, if this is what politics looks like when religion is exorcised from it.
Maybe you want to go back to the way it was before? Is that what you're saying?
A little easier to call someone out for swearing on the Bible.
I've made it very clear that I'm what my allegiances are as far as I was a Bernie Sanders supporter. I'm not, that does not mean I'm really not a fan of anybody on the presidential ticket this year. I'm just not. I won't lie. But I don't think it's as surprising to say that anything in particular about the Trump campaign, not because about Trump himself, but Trump gets a lot of attention and a lot of press and he draws a lot of heat and because, well, he is a robot sent by Bernardolf O'Higgins Hitler from the 7th Space Reich in order to destroy the human future. Because, as we all know, it's the prime-numbered Reichs you have to watch out for.
Ah.
little too much Babylon 5 there.
Yeah. Let's take him out of it, even though he is a sexist and a racist and an anti-Semite and whatever. I'm not, without saying that he isn't any of those things, let's take him out of the picture and let's talk about the guy who has been, no joke, tasked with running both foreign policy and domestic policy in a Trump campaign, in a Trump presidency, which would be Mike Pence, governor of Indiana, a person we have covered no less than, I think, 4 times on this show.
He inspired me to want to hold a memorial service for my wisdom teeth, you know, since he wants to have funeral for body waste.
Right.
For biohazard. And that's the you must have a funeral for aborted fetuses kind
right.
of bill.
Am I correct in remembering that Obergefell v. Hodges was originally Obergefell v. Pence?
I think it might have been, yeah.
That's something that was true.
Yeah, he wanted to actually criminalize gay people coming to apply for a marriage license even before same-sex marriage was legal, right? So actually make it a jailable offense to apply for something. I mean, yeah, Pence. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, and there, it's no joke. Trump was shopping for running mates by saying, "Would you like to run both foreign policy and domestic policy?"
So basically, would you like to be president?
Yeah. So yeah, this would be, we would be talking, a Vice President Pence is really a President Pence.
I would like you to cover my waking and sleeping life.
Yeah, pretty much. And so I am, you know, I am not a fan of the status quo. The candidate who is going to win the election is the status quo. The status quo has serious issues when it comes to things that I care about as an American, but, and definitely stuff like climate control that we've covered, or climate change, which we've covered extensively on the show and for science. But let's not pretend that a person that we have covered extensively because they want to hold funerals for miscarried fetuses is the same thing. And so that's my opinion. But the other side of that is, if you're supporting Hillary Clinton, you're going to have to get along with the people who decided to vote third party when this is all over. So you're going to so a lot of people that I've been watching on social media are probably going to have to find a way to apologize for falling in for all the inflammatory media in the last year. This election cycle has been terrible, and I thought nothing would scare me off of politics. I thought nothing. I love politics. I love it's better than professional wrestling as far as I'm concerned. And I thought nothing would take me away from the majesty that is terrible politics. And I thought Trump was just going to make that so much better. And oh my God, this is so much worse. And I'm literally off of Facebook until November 10th. But I am not even for a second pretending that Pence running domestic policy would be anything good for America. And that's as far as I'll go. Not work for you guys?
My only thought that I would like to add is that I don't care what you believe. I know we have Gary Johnson supporters. I know we have Jill Stein supporters as listeners.
We
might have Trump supporters. I haven't heard from any, but
we have one.
We have at least one.
Yeah, but he knows how I feel.
Okay. Go out and vote.
Definitely.
Don't sit this one out. No matter whoever you're voting for, don't sit this out.
Also, vote the whole damn ballot.
Vote the entire ballot.
There are a tremendous number of, there's a record number of atheists and humanist affiliated candidates for the first time that are openly, you know, declaring themselves atheists. And they're all over the country in the state legislatures, in, you know, for Senate and congressional races, for your local school boards. All of those are important. And all of that's really exciting.
Yeah.
Yes. It's, so just be engaged. This is not a huge sacrifice of time, of effort, of energy. This is a very small thing that we ask of you to take part in. This
may be a little bit of preaching to the choir, but here in Washington State, we've got some really great stuff on the ballot this year that really needs attention. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't cover this election this year as much as I probably should have because I was so turned off by the process, but there is some really, really fun stuff on this election. If you live in certain parts of the state, there are some candidates on the ballot who've been on this show.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something that should be on your mind. Vote the whole ballot. I guess that's it. Oh my God, there was a baseball thing I didn't talk about. But I'm not going to talk about it this episode, but I did want to talk about superstition in baseball.
Oh, okay.
Because I am superstitious when it comes to baseball. But I'll leave that as a teaser for some other time.
If only there were a song we could play going out to that.
Well, there just seems to be. This has been Ask an Atheist. We were actually recorded on Sunday. You can go to our website at askanatheist.tv. You can email us at questions@askanatheist.tv. You can give us a voicemail at 844-753-7842. We're on Twitter at askanatheistwa. We're still on Facebook, even though I'm staying away from it because I'm scared. Thank you, guys. Go vote. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
Thank you, Becky.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you, everybody. We'll be live again next week. Live-ish. See you then. That was a long episode.
That felt really fun, though.
But it was a, yeah.
Yeah, that was good.